Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. It's now 10:31. Hello.
Hey, good morning. Thank you.
Morning.
Thank you very much. Morning to you. I got to thank you. Right, look, other than the conversation you had one before the last, in fact, the last one as well, too, my opinion has always been, it's not that moderators can't take me on because they don't have the intellectual capacity and that kind of thing. No, that's a lot of nonsense. I believe that the treatment comes, I'm a bit aggressive towards them, comes because it seems as if moderators, but excluding your last conversation, the one previous, have this somehow assumed responsibility to defend government policy. It doesn't matter how radical that policy is or how ridiculous it is. They seem to think that it's okay to come to the public and sell it. So a prime minister wakes up in the morning and say, hey, again, I like what you said just now and the one before. The sky is purple. The sky is green. And these moderators get up here and says, yes, the sky is green. And they can tell you every reason possible for you to start believing that the sky is in fact green. And then someone like myself comes and says, look, wait, that sky is not green. They can take you around the corner, up the bend, wrong, change the topic, even cut you after 30 seconds because you are not supposed to oppose government policy. Now, that last conversation you had was a similar conversation that I have about having people stand up in the sun. Now, you entertained that lady just now very quietly and correctly because it makes no sense to have people standing up in crowds in the sun when you can have a more contained environment in air condition on the inside of the same Black Rock Polyclinic. I mean, that is how, and then, of course, if enough people make enough noise about that thing that happens at the Black Rock Polyclinic, then perhaps they will be changed, particularly through this particular calling program or the other one. But, you know, if you go down that route, man, let me tell you, you can't get your second word in because there is a problem at the polyclinics with people who are sick having to stand up in the sun. So that conversation was very well appreciated. I appreciate it very much, and thank you very much. The one previous to that, I heard 3 ministers a week and a half ago tried to sell me the idea that it was okay to bring British tourists here to Barbados and keep them for 3 days or something, even though they knew, even though they were advised that there was a strain in England that cannot be properly tested for. And these guys are trying to convince you, I don't have to call the minister's name because I'm pretty sure you know who they are, trying to convince you that even though they know the strain cannot be properly tested, they have been advised to continue accepting these guests and testing them in the normal way. No, you have a problem with the testing procedure. The protocols are not tough enough. They have never been tough enough. And you have a problem also with the quarantine position. So there is where the problem is. And it has been brought, it has been tested now that the tourist season has started. You know, the problem was always there. It's just that now the tourists have started to come back. It has filtered through into the general population. Now, to this point, there has been no comment about how they're going to fix those things, really. They're going to have tech bans and stuff that they're putting on people and so on. But are you still going to be accepting guests from a high-risk country without having the appropriate tests in place? I mean, there has been no real admission that there was a fault at the gates, and there is no real desire to fix the fault at the gates. So you continue to blame the local population. My opinion is that I live with viruses all the time. I protect myself. A lot of viruses enough out there. But I need to be entertained. Because life is like, I can't be at home all day. And nighttime coming, I got to stop in my house. I need to be entertained. I need to eat. I need to sleep. I need a chick from time to time, a woman from time to time. And I need, you know, I need to play sports. I need to go and have a laugh. I need to go and go into a bar and drink and, you know, I need stuff. Because I'm a human being and in a couple of years' time, I will probably be gone. What are you going to do? Make me suffer because you cannot contain a virus?
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I went into a conversation on Tuesday, I think it was, because there was a problem with the communication, the contact between the station and Peter Wickham. But by the time I got in there, I didn't hear what you had to say. But when I looked at the WhatsApp chat, people were condemning you because you had taken a position which I got the impression you were basically saying that we were going overboard and that sort of thing in trying to deal with the COVID-19 virus. Is that correct?
Yeah. No, that has been my position all along. I think that governments have a
response. So let me ask you a question. So having established that, now tell me, How does that square with where we are today and all of these tests in the prison and the bus crawl and all of the number of businesses that are closed today? Mm-hmm. Would you not concede that your assessment then was totally wrong?
No. Look, we live in an environment where we have viruses all over the place. We have Zika and chikungunya and all these things knocking about the place that can seriously harm people, particularly if they're already compromised. We don't particularly go through these kinds of tests and stuff to protect people against these kind of things. We do the correct thing. We warn them that if you are compromised or if you have some reason to believe that you will be seriously affected by these kind of things, stay at home or do certain things to protect yourself.
Are you putting this on the same footing as the common cold, the flu, and stuff like that? How can you, given the numbers that we are seeing in many countries, given the situation where the health facilities can be overwhelmed and that sort of thing,
right?
By COVID, how can you put these on the same footing?
Right. Could you put the pin right there in the health? When this thing first came out in February last year, there was never a concern about the kill rate, which is very, very small. The concern was then, as it should be now, and probably still is now, because even the minister I spoke of earlier was on TV saying a week and a half ago, that the kill rate has not changed. The strain out of the UK, the kill rate has not changed. It's just it is a little more virulent. From February last year, the concern has always been about virulence and the opportunity to overwhelm the health facilities in Barbados. That has always been the argument. The argument has not changed. This virus cannot be seen as some serious killer because it really is not. Invariably, it will take the lives of people who are already infirmed in some way. But that is true for so many other sicknesses as well. So many other sicknesses I could be so sick that the common cold will kill me, and then they will say that I died of the common cold. I mean, that is where we are at right now. I think that the panic about this thing as a killer has to stop. It is about the virulence. It has always been about the virulence. And if you have a problem with virulence, these steps that you're going through are really an overkill. Now, I am not concerned particularly about I hate wearing masks, but if I have to wear a mask, I will do that. I wear a mask, you wear a mask, we're fine. But putting me to stamp in the hot sun has always been my problem. And I don't even think that is necessary, because when I'm standing up on the sidewalk and they bundle up with everybody else, they could tell me that, hey, I don't see anybody social distancing on sidewalks anymore, or by the Black Rock Polyclinic. They're just up there standing up together. It is not really that much of a big deal. When they can see government make policy that decides that people can come through from England with the it has to be with no test at all, because they cannot test the British properly. It tells me that they are not particularly concerned about the virulence either. It is not a killer disease. And you are going about the place giving people the impression if you go there, you're going to die. It is the politics of fear. The same that has been back in 2001 when we had the 7-Eleven. Back in 2008 was separate, but 2001.
I just want to say to you that.
Yeah. Like I'm being insensitive. I am being somehow.
Some people, for some people, it's a question of the number of deaths. There are 83.
Small number. 83. It's not the government of Barbados.
Points. 83.7 million confirmed cases across the world.
In a population of 6.7 billion, perspective.
1.8 million deaths. However, when you look at the other elements of this, other people are concerned for other reasons. One,
like what?
It is the extent to which this particular virus carries the unknown. I have heard, for instance, of long haulers. These are people who have had the virus for a very long time. They ain't dead, but it has changed their lives in significant ways. Let me make the point. Because if you locate this only in the area of the number of people who die from it, it does not tell the whole story about why this particular virus has had the worldwide impact that it has had.
Right.
And that element of the unknown and the fact that this virus continues to mutate, and as you've seen in Britain and in South Africa, you know, have a virus that is a bit more contagious and that sort of thing.
Right.
Look what it has done to Barbados alone right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. It spreads. What would be interesting to find out, you have all these fit prisoners up there. How many of them are going to actually die? How many of them are going to actually get seriously sick? You see, when you have pneumonia,
which and is that is lungs, that So that's the point. You cannot just look at this from the point of view of whether it kills. You also have to look at it from the point of view of how it impacts on people's health.
You know, the thing is that when you have your when your lungs are sick, your lungs are involved with the oxygenation process where it gets, you know, your muscles need oxygen, your brain needs oxygen. When that process becomes ill, either it's hemoglobin or your lungs or something, the oxygenation process becomes impaired. You suffer lasting, lasting effects. So any number of issues could cause your lungs to become inflamed. Any All number, right. of, including a fungus from you drink the wrong kind of water. Once okay. your lungs become sick, the
but
results
I think,
will be the same.
As far as I'm concerned, you are minimizing this, and I don't agree.
Not, you see, this
but let's move
problem.
On. Let's move on. Let's move on. We gotta go. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks.
Good
yes,
morning.
Welcome.
Yes, good morning. Now, Mr. Ellis, up until now, the strategies and protocols that have been put in place to counter the COVID virus in Barbados have been comparatively successful. Of all the major countries in the world, of all the countries in the world, as a matter of fact, Barbados has been in the top tier of countries that have successfully managed to combat this virus up until now. Now, what has happened in the last couple of days in Barbados, I believe, should send alarm bells ringing through Barbados. We have had a super spreader event. From my perspective, we should have closed Barbados down immediately, a 24/7 shutdown. The reason for this being is that COVID is an enemy. We are in a war right now. We are in a war. Just say if we were in a kinetic war, we are in a war right now. Right now, having tested the people who we know would have come directly into contact with the virus through the super spreader event, we should now basically, we are now in the process of testing the people who would have come into contact with them as a secondary event. Having evaluated that process up until tomorrow, Tuesday, we will now know basically if the virus has escaped into Barbados, right, into the general population. Not knowing that at this point in time means that Barbados should right now be in a frozen position, frozen meaning a 24/7 lockdown, so that the virus cannot basically continue to do its work of replication through the vectors that are provided by people moving about and doing their normal day-to-day business. In my estimation, the 9 to 5, the 9 to 5 a.m. curfew is, while it goes somewhere toward minimizing movement, it is ineffective because the virus also operates during the day. Okay? This virus is an implacable enemy. It has a primary directive to replicate itself, to find a host and to replicate itself. We cannot make concessions to the virus. We can't make concessions to it because the virus is not making any concessions to us. Therefore, we must act in a manner that is, while it may be considered to be draconian, it is necessary. First up, Barbados should be on 24-hour lockdown. Secondly, we should do whatever is possible within the context of our economic and our financial position to ensure that the vaccination or a vaccination is available to Barbados in the shortest possible time. I have heard about a 3-month period. In my opinion, 3 months is too long. In the light of this super spreader event, Barbados cannot, would not, in case, heaven forbid, that there is a community, a large-scale community transmission of the virus, Barbados will not be able to survive for 3 months. We have seen the situation in Britain. The virus has ripped the heart out of Britain and in Europe. And in the United States, right? We cannot afford such an event in Barbados. We will not be able to survive it, basically, because we neither have the resources, we don't have the geographical space we would not be able to survive that. So we need, as a secondary priority, as a matter of fact, as a core primary priority, to get a vaccine into Barbados. Now, I do not want to, to have a geopolitical view on this because, you know, there are questions about if we're going to take the Moderna Western-based vaccine or if we're going to take the Russian Sputnik V or the Chinese vaccine. I am saying to you that the priority now should be to acquire a vaccine, whether it be the Russian vaccine or the Chinese vaccine, whichever is most convenient to be acquired by Barbados, we should be able to acquire this vaccine. Barbados has a population of around 270,000 people. I am suggesting that Barbados at least tries to acquire about 150,000 vaccines. The strategy here is that we will begin to inoculate people from 90 years old down to 40 years old because Barbados is an aging population. So we inoculate the most vulnerable people first. Then the additional vaccines that will be coming in, another 100,000 or so, will be used to vaccinate the persons from 39 years down into childhood. So the very last people to be vaccinated will be the people who are the least vulnerable to the virus, which are the school age people, the 16s and under, okay, down to infant stage. So basically we will be acting proactively to reinforce the population against the ravages of this virus. Barbados, I must remind you, is an aging population riddled with NCD comorbidities. So a breakout of the virus in Barbados, and we do not yet know if this is the variant of the virus or if it is the original virus. If it is the variant, then we are in exponentially more trouble than would be if it is the virus.
You've laid out your thoughts quite articulately and stuff. One of the points which has been made by the authorities is that they're working closely with the World Health Organization on these matters. And when I go to the World Health Organization site, they say there are currently more than 50 COVID-19 vaccine candidates in trials. WHO is working in collaboration with scientists, business, and global health organizations through the ACT Accelerator to speed up the pandemic response. And they go on to say that when a safe and effective vaccine is found, COVAX, led by World Health Organization, Gavi, and CEPI, will facilitate the equitable access and distribution of these vaccines to protect people in all countries. So on the one hand, the authorities are depending upon the World Health Organization to chart the path in this regard. On the other, you say we need to get a vaccine immediately. And that means that we are going to be, we got to do our own research to find out which of these many vaccines that are available, because you get a lot of focus on Moderna and Pfizer and all of those, the ones that are produced by certain countries. Remember this though, sir. What is at the core of why we are in trouble? It is that people have to measure lives against livelihoods. That if you shut down, you call for this 24-hour shutdown, there are a lot of people in Barbados who don't want to see another shutdown because they feel that we got to work with this disease one way or the other. And that to shut down will cost us more and it will jeopardize us more. That's another view to this. Huh? And therefore, you go the route that other countries have gone to. I mean, some have shut down completely in areas, but others have used the curfews and that sort of thing because the economic damage that has already been done to Barbados and the extent to which we are likely to suffer even more economic damage through a shutdown scares a lot of people. So deal with that and tell me how you see it.
Well, yes, I agree with you wholeheartedly that there is a price to shutting down. Barbados right now is in what I would describe as a Russian roulette environment. Okay, you're familiar with the concept of Russian roulette.
Yes.
Okay.
Explain it for those who may not be familiar.
Well, Russian roulette basically is that you put a round in a pistol, spin the barrel, and you can pull the trigger. That you would have an equal chance of either killing yourself or not. If there's a round in the chamber, when you pull the trigger, you die. If there's no round, you live. Now, Barbados is in that kind of a position. Unfortunately, we are a small, economy, with a single industry that is intrinsic to the performance of our economy. Now, COVID is attacking that very industry that we are most dependent on. But we still have to live. We still have to function. We still have to go about our daily tasks and to do things in the country that basically will guarantee our quality of life. Having said that, we are facing a deadly pandemic, one that can literally bring about an unimaginable disaster.
But you're saying that the previous caller to you didn't project it that way. That caller points out that for all that has all the cases that we have had worldwide, only a small percentage of the world population has died from COVID. And it is true to say that since March and April of last year, we have done remarkably well in trying to reduce the number of deaths from this disease.
Well, I agree with you.
Professionals have been able to find ways and means of grappling with it. So your projection of it is dire in comparison to where we are right now.
But I may agree with you on that point, but what I'm saying to you, my point is, and I said it before, Barbados is an aging population with a lot of NCD, NCD non-communicable diseases inherent in the population. These are core morbidity factors within the COVID environment. And with a break loose of COVID in Barbados, those NCD core morbidities will come into focus. So what I'm saying to you, and I'm trying to look at it from a more positive perspective, right? But really and truly, if we are realistic with ourselves, we are facing a fairly dystopian future if we're not careful. As I said before, we have done a great job so far in keeping COVID out of our shores. But as in all things, a critical mistake might have been made that now has resulted in the situation that we're in. How do we deal with the situation? I am saying, and as I said it originally, we need to, to have two major strategies in place, and getting the vaccine is one of them. Okay, you talked about the 50 vaccines and so on that are available, throughout the world and so on. I am saying to you right now, the WHO is facing a massive task in trying to vaccinate.
You also know this, that when it comes to these vaccines, there's a lot of politics associated with it.
Of course.
Countries that are holding on to their vaccines. India, I heard them yesterday or today, India, they are holding on to their vaccines and say they must inoculate their people first before they sell vaccines to anybody else.
Exactly.
Okay.
But how can we get hold of a vaccine in the shortest possible time? I am saying to you that Russia has basically made vaccines available to countries outside of Russia. Argentina has gotten the Russian vaccine. Brazil has gotten a Chinese vaccine. Other countries have been getting vaccines from these people.
Sufficiently satisfied with the efficacy of their vaccines. That's part of the problem.
But you see, that is where the geopolitical, ideological aspect comes into it. You understand what I'm saying? Now, China has produced a vaccine that they're distributing to other countries and so on. Russia has produced a vaccine that they have been distributing to other countries. What I'm saying to you is that these countries are willing to make vaccines available to other countries. Now, China, whether you are ideological or not, whether whatever political perspective you might have, China is the single country in the world now that has the scientific, technological, and industrial capacity to produce vaccines on a massive level.
Sir, would you agree that in circumstances where you have the geopolitics that you talked about, that a country like Barbados would feel that it is safer to use a multilateral organization like the World Health Organization to guide it on these matters, since it is going to be a challenge for us to investigate this all on our own? So we will look, that's why the World Health Organization becomes so crucial.
But the World Health Organization is in itself wrapped up in a lot of geopolitical struggles. Remember that the United States
is the best organization that we've got right now that is doing that particular type of job. So you're not going to get caught up in trying to determine whether the Russian vaccine is the better one for you or the Chinese vaccine or Moderna or whatever. You're going to go to the World Health Organization and say, look, all of these countries have come together, they pool the resources, and they depend upon your word to guide us on this particular matter, rather than small countries like ours. And we're really disadvantaged, as you well know. Very disadvantaged in these circumstances.
But how long is that going to take? And can we afford to wait? You see, these are the questions now.
You've got to balance that against the knowledge that you have of the vaccine.
Well, yeah, you know, the
just going to take a chance.
Well, I think when it comes down to it, you're going to have to take a chance anyhow, because there are lots of people in the world now who are basically saying they're not going to take the vaccine because they're afraid of it.
You know, but a lot of people don't know how long any vaccine will last either.
Precisely, and you don't know if the variants now in the vaccine will in the virus itself will defeat the vaccine as such. So we are in a very difficult position here.
I want to thank you very much for your contribution. There are quite a number of other people who, you know, are online and they want to have their say, but I value the perspective that you have brought, and it's always very encouraging when we have voices that we don't normally hear. But more than just the voice, it is the quality of the contribution that you make that we value. Thank you very much.